Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, it's an action fighting sort of episode of Mortal Kombat 2, and They Will Kill You. Mortal Kombat 2 is in theaters right now. Follow up to, was it 2021's Mortal Kombat
21.
1? Yeah, it's been a minute. I know, that came straight to HBO. We covered it on the show. This one's out in theaters. Excited to talk about it. Also taking a look at They Will Kill You, which is... a film that came out earlier this year starring Zazie Beetz from a Russian writer-director. His name escapes me right now. We'll get to it when we get in the review. Cool movie, though. Cool movie. They Will Kill You. Cool. Surprisingly cool movie. Stick around for the review. It's good stuff coming, and They Will Kill You. We're taking a look at some upcoming trailers, namely Evil Dead Burn and Tony from A24. Before we get to everything, when you get to the news, our first story this week, Peacock is making 4 Fast and Furious TV series, according to Vin Diesel. And that's the important part of this headline, maybe the most important part, because I don't think they're actually making 4, but Vin Diesel says they are. What do you know about this, Andy?
So Vin Diesel is constantly overselling everything. He's always like, oh yeah, we're gonna do 3 more of this. It's starting next weekend. Be out this summer. He's always kind of overselling every kind of little announcement. There is one TV show in development for Peacock, and is said to be taking Fast and the Furious back to its roots, back to street racing. I think, sadly, this may be where we see that series end. We'll probably see some cameos from the people in the movies, but it's going to TV, and that's kind of a trend. I saw that there's this Creed from like the Rocky universe TV show in development as well, about the team that trained Creed. So it seems to be this trend of these big, what were once big film properties, going to TV.
Yeah. Vin Diesel said on Monday at NBC Universal's up front at Radio City Music Hall, sitting across from Jimmy Fallon on the stage, quote, "For the last decade, we've realized that the fans have wanted more. They want us to expand legacy characters and their stories. For the last decade, the desire has been for us to enter the TV space. The news that I have here today is that Peacock is launching 4 shows from the Fast and Furious universe." Unfortunately, Andy's right. He kind of does this all the time. He kind of just upsells it always and seems to consistently be wrong. The last few Fast and Furious announcements he said were going to be a big deal, and they're not. They're not a big deal, but it makes for big headlines, and it gets clicks, and it gets his name in the press, which I guess is a strategy. But no, insiders at Peacock and NBC Universal said they're making 1 show, and even that 1 show like doesn't even have really a log line yet. So that's total nothing, just kind of nothing burger. But man, I love people reporting on it, right? It's really funny to see Vin Diesel, you know, kind of taking a pie in the face again, because reality is, you know, catching up with him. But for what it's worth, I do think Fast and Furious moving to TV is a good idea. I do think that's a good idea, because yeah, the movies are stuck. They kind of can't move. Like, they didn't really make enough money on the last one. It ended on this big cliffhanger, and now it's been years since we saw, you know, what's going to be next. Everybody's going to be older in those movies. There's a kid in that movie that's now got to age up. Like, I think the TV move is smart, because you can kind of generate buzz and get people going again. What you don't want to do is fall into the Disney trap, where Disney dilutes Marvel and Star Wars with Disney content on Disney Plus, and then they, I don't know, you just kind of don't have anything. But like, Fast and Furious has no motion. There's no motion right now. There's nothing fast, there's nothing furious about where this franchise is. So yeah, maybe TV's good, but they're definitely not getting 4 television series. That's nuts.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Divergent YA series. They did 3 films, and then the 4th film didn't happen, and they were going to do a TV show. And then Shailene Woodley dropped out because she's like, I didn't sign up to do TV. I'm a movie actor. And so that reminds me of this. It's like Fast and Furious, which was once the biggest franchise on the planet, is now headed for the small screen.
Yeah, man. We got an update on the next Planet of the Apes film, namely that we have a director in Fantastic Four First Steps, director Matt Shakman, who's going to be taking on the new Planet of the Apes flick. Tell me about Planet of the Apes, Andy. You're caught up on these movies.
So when we last saw, we reviewed Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which was made about $400 million, a pretty good success, but not kind of outstanding. And they're going to pivot with this series. That movie kind of led to what was clearly a sequel, something else in this kind of Caesar series. This is actually the 4th in these kind of more modern Planet of the Apes films. And it seems like they're just going to take a different direction, reinvent it, start over in some ways. They've done four films with this same kind of lore characters throughout the 2010s and now, and I think they were a little disappointed with the finances of the previous film, and so they're going to go in some new direction, and Matt Shackman, who of course did the Fantastic Four last summer, is going to lead the way.
I'm not caught up on Planet of the Apes movies. I did not keep up with them for a long time. I saw a little of that first one with James Franco years ago, and then didn't watch any of the others. I just remember seeing clips online and stuff, and that they were a big deal. But these films have continued to make money. The most recent one that I saw was Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Like Andy said, we covered it on the pod. You can check the review on the channel. And I liked it. I was really warm on that movie. Like coming in, I figured that it would be baggage. I wouldn't be able to keep up. I wouldn't know who the characters are. But like, no, that movie was great for a not knowing anything going in, which is really impressive and is not easy for films to do, especially since there's kind of a bit of a legacy with Planet of the Apes. It's not just James Franco. There's movies that go back to the 60s, you know? So I think, you know, Matt Shackman jumping in and making another one makes a lot of sense. I wasn't that warm on Fantastic Four First Steps. I thought it was fine. But Kingdom was kind of good for what it was. And I think I'm interested in them making more. You know, I think having seen that one coming in fresh, I would probably go check out another. So, yeah, if Shackman does a good job, you know, it'll be something worth covering on the pod, I think.
Yeah, I enjoyed that series as well, and maybe it's just grown stale, because especially this fourth film, our main character, Caesar, it's like, you know, decades after this great ape has died and his name has kind of been corrupted, and you know, there's some interesting ideas, but I think they're just ready to kind of reinvent the series again.
Yeah. Speaking of reinventing series, we're getting a new Long Legs movie. We talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago on the pod with the announcement that there was some motion happening with Osgood Perkins and Nick Cage around another Long Legs project. But apparently we have a date. We have a studio. We have a star. We have a movie. What is this about, Andy?
Well, in just a couple of years, in 2028, January 14th, Nick Cage will reprise the role of Long Legs. And you may ask, well, he doesn't survive, spoilers, he doesn't survive the first movie, so how do we get more of him? Well, the serial killer in the story was active for 30 years, decades, and so I think we're going to be going back in time to a different point in the Long Legs mythos, see what he was up to, maybe how he became Long Legs origins, you can always do that. But there's 30 years of, I guess, material that you could potentially cover. So it looks like that's what we're doing.
First Long Legs film sounds really funny to say. I guess I should get used to it.
It does.
Long Legs came out in July 2024 on a $10 million budget, just under actually, made $128 million worldwide, right? A dozen times its budget. So naturally, Neon wants to get in with more of this. Osgood Perkins wants to make more because it's been a bit of a high water mark for him. Monkey did not do as well, I don't think. Keeper definitely did not do as well, but those are both smaller features too. Nick Cage wants to get back into it. Why not? Why not do more Long Legs stuff? The thing I hope is persistent going forward, I hope that they do with this next Long Legs movie, is that really unique marketing campaign. Like, God, the early trailers for Long Legs were so weird and like didn't have a title at the end, and were like weird freak music and like flashes of footage, and like I remember seeing them in the theaters thinking like, oh my God, that movie looks cursed, you know? And I think that's part of the reason it did so well. I don't know where exactly it's headed, like you said, probably going to be some sort of prequel or something like that. But man, if it can get the tone right and you can hit us with some more of those trailers, like I think you have something that feels really unique in the horror space, for sure.
Yeah, it's exciting. And again, I think that's Neon's most successful film ever, basically, because the budget was only $10 million, and it made so much more. So it's kind of like, especially in Hollywood speak, of course, we were always going to get a sequel.
Yeah. We have a new update on Panos Cosmatos' new feature. This is a very specific director, made a film called Mandy in 2018 with Nicolas Cage, speak of the devil. And now he's got another film coming out. Two films, actually, but this one in particular actually just started shooting with A24 and a couple of special stars. Tell the folks at home, Mandy, what do we have to look forward to?
Well, Mandy is, if you haven't seen it, go out and see it tonight. It's again, ironically, also Nicolas Cage, really incredible horror film, lots going on, great visuals and sound. The great Johansson scored that film. His next film's called Flesh of the Gods, and it's an 80s set, LA set, vampire underground thing. We don't really have a lot more than that in the description, but I was like, knowing this director, that sounds absolutely amazing. And of course, top cast with Kristen Stewart and Wagner Moura.
Yeah, really outstanding. They're filming half the film in Spain, the other half in Germany, but like Andy said, it's set in Los Angeles. Here's the log line. A married couple in glittering 80s LA who descend each evening from their luxury skyscraper condo and head into an electric nighttime realm. When they cross paths with mysterious and enigmatic Nameless and her hard-partying crew, Raul and Alex are seduced into a glamorous, surrealistic world of hedonism, thrills, and violence. Flesh of the Gods, also co-written by the guy who wrote Seven. And I know he's done other stuff, but I've seen his name pop up. It's like, hey, the guy who wrote Seven's working on this. So, like, that's kind of cool. This is Cosmatos' first film since 2018, since Mandy. The only other thing he's done, he made a film a few years before that, I think 2011, called Beyond the Black Rainbow. And then, really odd, he has produced, like, a baker's dozen of, here it is, Miley Cyrus music videos. Really strange. You go look at his IMDb, and it's like producer, like 20 Miley Cyrus music videos. And then, oh, here's a couple little features he directed too. But Mandy is really rad. And I've heard Beyond the Black Rainbow is a great time. I never got the time. I'll come around to it eventually. If you've seen it right in the show, maybe you'll encourage me to check it out. Yeah, I don't know. I thought Mandy was really cool. It was my favorite. I think it was my favorite film of 2018. Really looking forward to this. Excited to see Kristen Stewart back in Vampire World. I didn't think she'd ever do another vampire movie again. But here we are.
Yeah, it's really exciting stuff. And again, it's been so long, 8-9 years since his previous film. And I remember seeing that in the historic Texas theater, Bigger Than Life. And it's just an incredible experience. So I can't wait to see it.
We're going to talk about The Devil Wears Prada 2 at the box office, in our box office segment this week. How are the numbers looking?
Absolutely huge weekend for The Devil Wears Prada 2. $43 million domestic in its second weekend. And $433 million globally. It is an international hit, and people are comparing this to Barbie a little bit. It's not going to make $1 billion, but it's just, once again, there is this giant female audience that is not catered to very much, and women want to see movies and will go to movies. So you're leaving a lot of money on the table by not making more films for women. $433 million. People think it's going to top out at like $600-700 million. It's going to be a massive hit. One of the biggest hits of the year. Huge surprise.
Really big surprise. I knew it was going to do good just because of the cast. I did not think it was going to make $500 million globally. That is nuts, right? Enough to run a magazine. I mean, congrats, right? Congrats to the cast. Congrats to the crew. I heard it was good. I heard it was fine. When I was going to Mortal Kombat this weekend, I saw a couple of like moms walking into Devil Wears, like looking at their tickets in like the dark hallway at Cinemark, like walking down to Devil Wears Prada 2. But you know, I hear it's great. Here it's a good time. If you've seen it, write in the show. Tell us about it. Maybe we'll cover it. We'll check it out. How'd Mortal Kombat do?
So this was the release, and Mortal Kombat, the first one came out in 2021. It was a pandemic era film. It came out simultaneously in theaters and on HBO Max. So it had a weird release. Did okay money-wise, but it came in with $40 million over the weekend, $63 million globally. It is a more expensive film with an $80 million budget, but it's probably going to do pretty well. It's going to have legs. It's going to be fine on VOD. Merch sales are going to help that, game sales, that sort of thing. So big weekend for Mortal Kombat 2. Finishing out the top five, Michael, in its, I think, third week, had another $36 million for $577 million globally. That's doing really well. The Sheep Detectives, which I didn't know anything about. It's a new Hugh Jackman kind of family-friendly mystery comedy thing, $15.9 million. I thought Hugh Jackman was the Sheep Detective. No, he's the one who actually, he gets murdered, and the sheep have to solve the crime. But, you know, people have been talking about that. And then to finish out the top five with the longest title of the year, Billie Eilish, Hit Me Hard and Soft, the tour live in 3D, 7.5 million, 20 million global. These concert films continued to do really well.
We were going to cover Billie Eilish, Hit Me Hard and Soft, the tour live in 3D on the pod, and then ended up pulling away from it just because one of us is out of town, and we just figured it'd be hard to find a time, and it was only in limited theaters, so I don't know. We just ended up not doing it, which is fine. I am a little bit curious about what James Cameron is doing when he's not doing Avatar, like it or not. It is a James Cameron directed production, and he shot the whole film with like fancy special 3D cameras, like I guess a lot like Avatar, so that's part of it. Like it's supposed to be, you know, some sort of slick thing. So yeah, I between that and like an Eilish fine, I got a bit of a passing curiosity for sure. If you've seen it, right into the show. Also, Sheep Detectives. I keep hearing about this movie. We might have to put Sheep Detectives on the watch list at some point. I've had a couple people ask me if we were going to cover it on the pod, and I'm like, no, but it's got a really good Rotten score, but like we'll get around to it. We'll cover Sheep on VOD or something, or like if we have a slow week, we'll come around and cover Sheep Detectives. Cause yeah, I am curious. Maybe I'll mini it or something, but I don't know. Yeah. Meanwhile, I know I'm talking too long on box office. Michael making $577 million globally is very, very good for sure. Dude, Devil Wears Prada is like within striking distance of that. That's crazy. Like, I would have thought the Michael Jackson movie would be a breakout. It is in music biopics for sure. Second closest is Bohemian Rhapsody with $216 million. So like double the biggest music biopic ever prior to this. But even still, like, music biopics, they only got so much gas, I guess. Like, people, you know, I don't know, people are tired of them. Maybe it's controversy. I don't know. But either way, man, big numbers at the box office. Not a bad Mother's Day weekend, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was an all-out kind of fight for the top spot. Mortal Kombat came close. But again, women coming out in droves to support The Devil Wears Prada 2. I've heard it's not quite as good as the first one. The first one is based on an actual book novel about a real-life person and her experiences. And so the second one is very much just kind of sequelitis. We just kind of come up with excuses for our characters to be in the same rooms and do the things we love to see them do. Also, the fashion industry is very heavily involved in this film, which they kind of turn their nose up at the first one. So it's just kind of a different world, but it's hugely successful.
Yeah, I want to see what's coming out this next week. We've got Obsession. It's kind of the big one. Obsession's the big release. Guy Ritchie's new movie, In the Gray, is coming out with Henry Cavill and Jake Gyllenhaal.
That happens I heard this joke that happens every May, that a new Guy Ritchie film starring Henry Cavill comes out that no one knows about.
Dog. I used to like Ritchie a lot, and we watched a lot of his movies for the pod. I don't know. I've fallen off the Ritchie train, man. He's just flattened out in a way. I was going to ask, we're covering Obsession next week on the podcast, new Curry Barker horror. How do you think that movie's going to do? It doesn't look like anything's really competing with it in the horror space.
I think it's got some buzz. I think horror heads will come out for it. But the question is, Obsession going to be the big hit of summer, or is it going to be Backrooms? Because I've heard that like there's room for basically one big horror hit. Last year it was Weapons. The year before it was Long Legs. So it's question of what's going to be the breakout.
It's so funny. In 2 weeks we have the first Star Wars movie in like 7 years or something, right? Mandalorian and Grogu coming to theaters, and nobody my age is particularly excited about it. But I am excited about that weekend. I love Boosters. New Boots Riley flick. That movie's going to be sick. I'm very much looking forward to I Love Boosters, Kiki Palmer. I guess that's what we're doing that weekend, huh? Are we covering Mandalorian on the pod? Do you want to watch Mandalorian for the pod?
I think we kind of have to.
I want people to click. I want this show to turn into something. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the movie of the week. Yeah. Okay. It'll be fine. We'll do that in Boosters. Boosters will be... I look forward to Boosters. That'll be great. Mandalorian and Grogu will be summer, whatever. We got to talk about... what are we doing here? We got to talk about Mortal Kombat. It's time to talk about Mortal Kombat. I got to get through it.
That's right.
Andy's going to be taking the summary. Let me get out of his way. Andy, please take it away.
Mortal Kombat 2. So again, the follow-up to 2021's Mortal Kombat, which again released simultaneously in theaters and online. Kind of beloved. We watched, I think we reviewed it for the show. It was kind of okay. There was no actual fighting tournament. This, of course, is based on the video game from the 90s, where there's a big tournament for the fate of Earth, and Earth heroes and bad guy villains have to fight for you know, in the tournament Mortal Kombat. There was a film in 1995 that's a cult classic, a sequel in 97 called Annihilation that's really bad. Like, it's the kind of the opposite. It's like one of the worst films ever made. And so here we have Mortal Kombat 2 kind of again. And in this one, we have Carl Urban, who stars as Johnny Cage, who's you know, one of the fan favorites from the game, and who is canonically a movie star who's kind of dragged into this. And we find him in this funny place where he's like kind of a washed up, he's like a Tom Cruise style action hero or like a Jean-Claude Van Damme. But he's at the end of his career. He's at this convention. He's signing posters. No one's at his booth. They're all, you know, wanting to sign with other people. And when Lord Raiden from the game magically appears from the parking lot and says, "Hey, you've been chosen for Mortal Kombat. You will be one of Earth's champions." And he's like, "Go away. Like, whatever. Love your cosplay. I'm out of here." And he gets sucked into like the Nether Realm anyways and discovers that he is in fact going to have to participate in this. A lot of kind of like him finding his mojo. The plot gets a little complicated. We have, again, our tournament, but we also have some side plot involving Katana, played by newcomer Adeline Rudolph, who's kind of the co-lead of the film. She's actually she gets top billing in this. Carl Urban is doing like part-time work where he's not in the film like all the time. They definitely kind of spread it out, which helps spread out the budget. But we have our favorites back. We have Katana, Johnny Cage, Shao Kahn, played by the great Martin Ford, who's just like this huge, huge dude. Liu Kang, Kano, Raiden, and Hiroyuki Sanada, who you might know from Shogun, the TV show, is back as Scorpion. So we have all our favorites, and we actually get kind of a bigger film. We get more fights, more effects, more grisly fatalities. Lots going on. Zach, what do you think?
So we covered the first Mortal Kombat reboot a few years ago when it came to HBO. Came straight to it. We were like, well, we'll check this out for the show, and it was okay. It didn't feel very big and theatrical, but like streaming at home felt good. So making the jump to theatrical here and following up that a few years later, I was like, I don't really remember what exactly was happening in that movie, but it's Mortal Kombat, right? I played some of the games. I've watched some of those old movies. It's pretty simple. Tournament of Champions. Everybody gets together. Mortal Kombat, right? We got our characters and our levels. And I think this movie, like, if you take it real serious, if you're really like side-eyeing this, and like this plot is lame and these characters, this continuity has problems, this doesn't work, you're going to think this is lame, that for sure. But if you're just trying to come at this as like a fun summer flick where like you get the popcorn at concession and you watch like 15 fights across like 20 different fighters and like 9 different levels, it's a great time. It's a great time. Very fun Mortal Kombat movie. Not a great like movie for sure. Messy, too many characters. Odd continuity problems, but like you get so many cool fights. There's like 3 cool fights in this. There's some funny lines. Carl Urban's a lot of fun. Like Mortal Kombat 2. Surprisingly, not bad. A good fun summer sort of flick, I think. R-rated, juicy. What'd you think?
I actually really enjoyed this, and I grew up playing Mortal Kombat and was there when it was like very controversial in like 92, 93, because like, you know, you had these 16-bit graphic violence and it was literally making the nightly news, and I've kind of followed it, and I'm more of a Soul Calibur Street Fighter person, less Mortal Kombat, but it's like the characters have just become so kind of part of pop culture, and I think this is a lot of fun. The plot kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, but our characters are fun. Again, Adeline Rudolph as Katana is the co-lead. She's really good. Carl Urban, there was a lot of controversy because he's not really an action star. Like, he can't do, like, fight scenes and stuff. And he doesn't really have to do them very much. He's more there to be attitude Johnny Cage, which he does fine. Again, a lot of it's about getting his mojo back. But we have a great cast of characters. The plot, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And sometimes we have some moments we have all these vignettes of really good drama, either like Liu Kang versus Kung Lao. They have this brotherly thing. Kung Lao's like a zombie, basically. And then you have, of course, the drama between Scorpion and Sub-Zero and a couple of other things that are really, really dramatic. It just doesn't tie together in one cohesive narrative very well. But like, you don't care just because it's that fun. It is a little bit too long. I feel like it could shave about 10 minutes, and it kind of drags between the action. The action scenes are what you're coming for, and they're so good that it's like right out of the game, but then it just kind of hits the brakes a lot of times in between.
Yeah, a lot of fan service, which is important for what's going on here. I got a big kick out of Mortal Kombat series creator Ed Boon showing up early in a scene in a very like Stan Lee-esque cameo when he's like working as a bartender where like Johnny Cage is like drinking his sorrows away because he's this washed up old hack actor. And some guy at the bar is like, Johnny, I used to watch your movies. I think you're great. And he's like, get away from me, kid. Like nobody wants that anymore. Everybody just wants John Wick. That's what he says in the movie, like crazy. And then Q, like, you know, Mortal Kombat, Tournament of Champions. A lot of great levels. I know I said that earlier, but like where you're fighting is important. And there's like some good ones. You got your old like spike trap level from Mortal Kombat. You got like the poison pit level with like the green sludge, or if you fall in, it burns you. There's this awesome like blue portal swirling level thing that's like right out of the most recent one that just looks so sick. Doesn't make any sense, right? Like, where are they? In another galaxy? Are they moving at light speed? But that doesn't matter, all right? Like, we're watching Mortal Kombat. We're watching people beat the hell out of each other and hopefully cut each other up. Lots of gore, lots of juicy gore, lots of F-bombs that like feel kind of out of place, but then you see the violence and you're like, well, yeah, they were getting an R rating here. Like, there's no way this was going to be a PG-13. It would have been less if it was. So like they lean in, funny, goofy, and yeah, like a ton of characters. Characters that don't even get fights are in this movie. Like they had side characters that are actual fighters in the game or just running around in the background here. Like, oh, that's Sindel, the woman with the big voice thing. And that's, you know, Quan Chi or whatever his name is. Yeah, right. Shang Tsung. Here he is. Yeah, like, sure. Like, lots of that. So I think, like, you use your plot, which is not very good, as, like, kind of the, you know, the celery stick for which to get your peanut butter on, and that's the delivery system for Mortal Kombat 2. Like, pretty not great down there, but, like, you don't care, because ultimately you're there for the fights. Decent music. I was hoping I'd hear that big Mortal Kombat theme, which does make an appearance in the movie. But like, I was honestly waiting for like the big Act 3 fight. I was like, here it comes. They're gonna play it. It's gonna be sick. It's fine. It gets there. But yeah.
Yeah, our cast is so good. Josh Lawson, who played Kano in the first one, is kind of resurrected in this film. And he's kind of upstaging anyone. He's so funny. He gets all the funny lines. He's the one of two of the like comic relief. And he's so funny. And he's like funnier than everyone else. Other standout is the guy who plays Baraka, who's, again, strangely also the comic relief. Like, you wouldn't expect that from that character. That's played by CJ Bloomfield. And their whole like race of, it's a whole gag the entire time. It's really kind of funny. So there's a good balance of, you know, you have some dramatic stuff, a lot of humor. And I didn't expect it to be near as funny. It's got a little bit of Game of Thrones going on in it as well. There's some, you know, palace intrigue and backstabbing, strangely. And it all just sort of works when you kind of wouldn't think it, when you might think that it wouldn't.
Yeah, director, series writer-director here, Simon McQuoid, has only done this and the first Mortal Kombat film in 2021. That's it. He directed one video before that called The Nighttime Economy, which was not like a full film. He did that in 2014. Other than that, that's it. This is not somebody who's done like a bunch of films. We can't like look back at his filmography and see where he's come from. Like, he's kind of charting his own course here. And I would assume there's probably a third one of these coming, I would bet. But I think it's interesting that, I don't know, like it manages to kind of work. It manages to thread the needle because it's stupid. You know, it's stupid. Like, and there's parts of it that feel very kind of childish. Johnny Cage, like stumbling into the God realm or whatever. All right, guys, I'm getting out of here. This can't be real, right? Like, it's just like, okay, like eye rolling, but it moves through it quick. And ultimately, like, big sets, pretty good looking, you know, great CGI to make it look like these people are really fighting in like the Nether realm or whatever, Earth world. And it reminds me a lot of like Dan Trachtenberg's Predator, like Predator Badlands. Like, it's goofy and over the top and like intergalactic, but also like you don't mind too much. You just kind of fall into it a little bit and you're like, yeah, okay, like here I am. Here we go. We're on a little space adventure with our, you know, fighters. Kind of works. I think it's interesting to see this in comparison to like where that new Street Fighter movie's coming from. because I think that will be kind of informed by these movies in a way. I think that's a bit, these movies existing is a big part of the reason that movie's happening. So yeah, I think like this is an evolution on what they did last time. Feels pretty good. Feels pretty theatrical. I think it's a pretty good Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, I think they knocked it out of the park with this. A lot of people are saying it's probably the best Mortal Kombat movie that's been made, which I think I would probably agree with. Again, the first one was a classic in 95. You followed up with Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which is a total bomb and a really embarrassingly bad movie. You don't do anything for 20 years, and then you bring it back in 2021, and now we have just the, you know, the most polished, probably most expensive version of it.
Yeah. I think it's solid. Definitely room in a follow-up to add more fighters, bring some folks back. I think, I don't know, man. I think Mortal Kombat is moving in a good direction at the movies. So with that, Andy, would you recommend Mortal Kombat 2?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially for fans of the genre. If you've watched the other movies or played the games, you're going to have a good time. All your favorite characters are here. Good performances from Carl Urban and Adeline Rudolph, who are our main leads. It's a little long. It's not very cohesive, but the action is top-notch. The humor is top-notch. The effects, all that. So, highly recommend.
Yeah, I'd recommend as well. Mortal Kombat 2 is a fun time. Fun Mortal Kombat movie. Fun little action movie. Fun summer movie. Order the popcorn. You know what I mean? Relax. Put the seat all the way back. Turn the heat on. Turn your brain off. Mortal Kombat 2, baby. Rated R for gore and violence and bloody stuff. So yeah, that's Mortal Kombat. Two trailers to talk about this week in a very brief but interstitial segment. Andy, what do we call this?
It's time for the trailer park. We're going to first be taking a look at Evil Dead Burn. A lot of Evil Dead stuff happening lately. A couple years ago, we had Evil Dead Rise, which was kind of a reboot of the classic series. That was really successful. This is Evil Dead Burn, and we also have next summer Evil Dead Wrath. So a lot of Evil Dead stuff going on. We don't really get a lot of plot outside the tagline that a woman has lost her husband and she goes to stay with her in-laws, and then someone, of course, reads from the Necronomicon, and we're back to fighting deadites. And you know, because it's rote, you have to figure out new ways to do stuff. And there's a lot of really cool camera stuff going on. But, man, this thing looks so creepy. And a lot of, like, wince-inducing stuff. Really great. I'm super excited for this. Evil Dead heads are going to love it.
This, I know. These movies really are coming off like... like those old Saw movies, right, that people have said were just like torturous in their presentation. Like, I don't remember Evil Dead just being torture movies. Like, I don't think that's what these were, but they kind of are when you squint your eyes and look at them from far away. It's kind of a small cast doing a survive the night thing, and most of them typically don't make it in Evil Dead movies. So when this one kicks off and we see this little family in this small house, when this very strange sort of being approaches and starts to turn their world upside down. I just feel like none of them are going to make it. And then, yeah, you get these shots of like a kid falling on an open dishwasher rack with all the knives and forks sticking out. You get a shot of like a girl drinking hot wax out of a lit candle. You're like, oh God, like God, that last movie, Evil Dead Rise, it's somebody with like a cheese grater. You remember in the trailer, like, It just feels like these are going to be so torturous and that most of the cast isn't going to make it. And I guess that's good. And that's what we're going for sure. But man, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm just getting older and things are changing for me. I hope there's some charisma in there, you know, I hope that's a part of this. Cause I think that's the thing that like Evil Dead Rise was lacking just a little. Evil Dead 2013 had it, you know, had a couple characters at the front, mainly like this girl Mia, who's got a bit of a story and ends up kind of emerging as kind of a front runner to escape and survive the night. A lot like Bruce Campbell's Ash in Evil Dead. Evil Dead Rise, I don't really recall that being I guess the mom character kind of was that, but like not really. And here I'm like, I hope there's a girl in there with like kind of old dyed hair. You could see like her roots coming out and stuff. And I think that's kind of maybe our lead here. But yeah, I hope there's a bit of that charisma. I hope there's a bit of somebody at the front of that who's a bit of a spark plug, because that's the thing that I like about old Evil Dead, that you don't get so much anymore. You can't get Bruce Campbell. I get it. But, you know, give me a little bit of hero action. Please, please don't make this just people getting tortured for 90 minutes. Yeah, we got to talk about the trailer for Tony. This is the new A24 film starring Dominic Sessa, hot off the heels of The Holdovers, as Anthony Bourdain. It's a biographical drama, but it's not Anthony Bourdain's whole life. It is specifically set in 1976 when a 19-year-old Anthony Bourdain is working in a kitchen in Provincetown, Maine, I think, like a lobster place. It's from one of his books, from his biography. This is apparently a very formative time in his life, and Dominic Sessa plays this young kid who is just a jerk and thinks the world has been unkind to him and doesn't care about anybody, and I'm going to do what I want. And he gets this job at this restaurant on the coast where nobody else will accept him, and slowly over a summer he learns to, I don't know, fit in and learns to love cooking and find some passion and some purpose that would go on to inform the rest of his life. Film stars Dominic Sessa, also stars Antonio Banderas, Leo Woodall, and Stavros Halkias, fellow podcaster. Stavi baby, yeah, coming off the heels of Yorgos Lanthimos's last film, Begonia. And notably, I wanted to talk about this because it's being directed by Matt Johnson, who just did Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, which we covered on the pod. And did Blackberry, which we also cover on the pod. Not working with his normal handheld style. Blackberry shot handheld, Nirvana shot handheld, all his movies are shot handheld. This one's not. So new DP. We'll see what our man can do with an A24 movie. We'll see what Dominic Sessa can do as a lead with a movie on his shoulders. What do you think, Andy?
I like the look of this. I'm always excited about Dominic Sessa. He, of course, was the breakout star of The Holdovers, which we love on this show. So always excited to see how he grows in. He's going to be a star for sure. And this is, you know, he's headlining this film. He's got to play a very well-known character. Also, this, it helps for these biopics not to be a cradle to the grave telling. That's so hard to do. It's much better to take a moment out of a celebrity or an important, big, important person's life and just kind of deconstruct. And this kind of like, this incredible summer is what made him or was part of his like foundational development as a person. I think that's a really exciting thing to do. And you know, he's not trying to do the kind of thing where, well, let me look like young Bourdain, let me sound like, he's not trying to become the person. It's more of like embodying the vibes, the ethos of them instead.
Yeah, and I think you know, pairing with Johnson is cool because a big part of Matt Johnson's filmography is like a young it's about young frustrated men who don't really fit in and I don't know, are trying to make their way and get by in the world. Like Black Bear is about this group of young tech guys like who nobody understood them, and they're like, well, we have this thing, and people laugh them out of the room until somebody finally takes them serious. Nirvana, the band, the show, kind of a similar vibe. These two guys who are like struggling to become something bigger. He's got a movie called Project Avalanche about guys faking the moon landing for NASA. It's a whole thing. So that's Tony. It's coming from A24. That'll be coming this year, right? In August 2026, so soon. Yeah, that's coming soon. Excited to cover it on the pod. We got to talk about one more movie this episode. I'm going to be taking the summary on it, so please excuse me. Funny delivery. The movie is They Will Kill You. So, They Will Kill You is the story of Asia Reeves, who is working as a housekeeper in a luxurious New York City high-rise called The Virgil, when she discovers that something's amiss, something strange in this brand new job where Asia started working. And the first night, as she's living as a live-in housekeeper at this giant hotel, the lights go out, and when she awakes, there are some people in her room and some things afoot. And They Will Kill You evolves into from a thriller into a sort of slapstick, high action, high octane, gory, goofy, funny sort of action comedy. It stars Zazie Beetz in this action horror film, and it comes from director, God, I wrote this down, I gotta get this guy's name right.
Kirill Sokolov,
who is I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation on that, who is a Russian writer and director. It's his first American feature. 2 month shoot, very rigorous. Also stars Patricia Arquette as kind of the head mistress of the Virgil, hot off her appearance on Severance. Tom Felton is in this movie, our old Draco Malfoy. Heather Graham is in this movie from Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, nearly unrecognizable. And they will kill you. We caught this on VOD because we missed it in theaters. I'm excited to talk about it. Andy, what'd you think?
Yeah, so this movie's a lot of fun. It's definitely, it feels like a straight to streaming thing. It reminded me of a lot of a movie called Dust Bunny from a few months ago. It stars Mads Mikkelsen, a similar thing where you kind of have a really thin plot as an excuse to do action scenes. And similarly, that's what this is. Our plot nearly doesn't matter. We're really here for these big action set pieces, which Zazie Beetz, very much inspired by things like Kill Bill or Death Proof, takes on this horde of bad guys in this kind of cursed hotel. There's some mysteries going on. It's not all that meets the eye. A lot of really, really cool action. It's kind of funny. It's 90 minutes, which is great. Any longer and it would kind of wear out its welcome, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's hard to believe this is Zazie Beetz's first leading role. Like, it seems like she would have led something before this, but like as far as film goes, she's always been supporting. This is her first time actually leading a film as a protagonist. 2 month shoot, like I said, exhausting, very grueling. They got this girl on wires. They got her rolling and ducking and dipping and diving and dodging. We got like combat training. We have choreography. Tons of work to put this movie together, and all very practical and very gooey and very gory. It's funny, I was reading about the director, Kirill Sokolov, had said that everybody was afraid it was going to be campy and that it wasn't going to work, that like it was going to end up being a film that like just feels kind of phony and full of itself. But it's kind of the opposite. It ends up feeling like Tarantino. Yeah, it feels like Kill Bill. It feels like Death Proof. It has DNA from... like one part's like Eastern cinema and one part's like Looney Tunes, you know, like it ends up being something unique that totally works. A lot of style and flair and very good looking sets, very simple sets. The Virgil is not a complicated place. It's mostly just some hallways, rooms that look very similar, a couple of ventilation shafts, and then kind of like a final showdown sequence in like an attic space. But man, it's just a really simple, like 90 minute action thriller. Somebody called it a splatstick film, like slapstick but with a splat, and I was like, okay, that feels like an accurate depiction of what's happening here. Like goofy, funny, also big and very inspired from Beetz, who is this just very ruthless Asia Reeves, like this woman who's like not scared of anything. Like she's not putting up with anything that's going on in this hotel.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it has a bit of a kind of not sci-fi, but there's a horror angle to it too. It's not just all action, so it's a bit of a horror comedy. It's got a little bit of that catch me if you can now, not now you see me, now you don't. What did we Ready or Not?
Yes.
Ready or Not and Ready or Not Too. It has that style of that kind of survive the night, some supernatural stuff going off, a lot of style. I'm not sure what Patricia Arquette is doing as far as like what I think she's trying to do an Irish accent. I have no idea what her accent is. I was like, is that South African?
Yeah.
I cannot tell.
Yeah. So Arquette's really cool. I've kind of rediscovered her watching Severance and then listening to the Severance pod and then going back and watching like Escape of Dannemora. Ben Stiller's a big fan, and she was a part of both of those series. And both of those, she's doing very different characters. And like, I knew she had done a lot of work before and I've seen her in stuff, but like stuff that I've cared about recently, like Patricia Arquette has surprised and entertained. So yeah, in this, she's doing another big performance. She's doing a big accent and she's kind of doing a big thing, but also she is kind of playing her character from Severance. This like stern woman who like her hair is prim and proper and like her outfits are perfect. And she is like taking care of this very secretive space full of like hallways, right? Like it's kind of similar, but yeah, this big Irish accent she's doing like does not quite work. She also plays opposite Patterson Joseph, who is her husband in the film, also kind of like the hotel maintenance guy. His name's Ray. Unrecognizable. He is one of like the three chocolatiers in Wonka that plays opposite Timothy Chalamet. He's like one of those singing, dancing, he's Slugworth. He's that guy. He's like the main guy. He's like the head evil. Like that's like a goofy comedy kids performance. And this is like a totally different, just lean all the way into another angle. I never would have guessed that was the same guy. Crazy. But I think, Also, yeah, real quick, Heather Graham and Tom Felton are fine in this movie, is kind of like goofy celebrity henchmen. Poor Graham is hard. It's hard to recognize. She's hard to recognize. She had some work done, and she looks a little different, and she's still doing good. And I'm glad she's in it, getting the bag. Felton, meanwhile, has got to stop playing blonde British villains. He's got to stop doing that. Yeah. Like he just feels like he's playing like dumb Draco Malfoy again a little bit. And like, that's not really it. But Zazie Beetz is a lot of fun. Yeah, this movie's very, I know we said to Kill Bill, Quentin Tarantino. It's Big Trouble in Little China, right? It's Evil Dead 2. It's Cabin in the Woods. Like it's Ready or Not. Like it is a film that feels like something like amalgamations of things you've seen before. But from a fresh voice who hasn't done any English cinema before this, I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. Like, this is a really fun movie. Everything he's done before this has been in Russian. So maybe we should go back and check out some of those older features. But for what it's worth, I think this is, you know, solid time.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's real quick. Like I said, plot's very, very thin. Again, it involves with her trying to save her sister, played by Mahala. Not much there. You're there for the action. Like Mortal Kombat, you're not there for the plot. You're not there for the drama. You're here to watch 90 minutes of action, and it delivers.
Yeah, it definitely delivers. Also, keep an eye out when you check out They Will Kill You for this really fantastic fight scene 2/3 of the way through the movie, involving like a really dark ballroom and like a flaming axe. And like every time Zazie Beetz like lands this axe on one of these guys, their clothes light on fire and they slowly illuminate the room as they keep tumbling over tables and like lighting everything up. Really awesome. Really fantastic. Big lighting. I don't even know how you do that. How do you do that practically? Like there's no way the actress is actually swinging around a flaming axe. So you can do that with like digital or like you got light panels.
Stuntman.
I don't even know. Doing it. I couldn't even tell you how you do it. Yeah. There's like old boy tributes in here. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot going on and They Will Kill You. It's a good time. Andy, would you recommend They Will Kill You?
I think this is perfect for streaming right now. It's on VOT. It's a lot of fun. It did have a very short theatrical run. I don't think it really caught on. But Zazie Beetz is great as an action star here. She definitely should be doing more of that kind of work. And the action scenes are really fun. They're really good. And there's a lot of them. The plot's kind of not super interesting. Like I said, it falls into a lot of things you've seen before, but Ready or Not reminds me a lot of it. Our supporting cast is fine. Patricia Arquette doesn't know what accent to do. But overall, it's a fun time. Save it for streaming.
Yeah, funny, gooey, gory, triumphant. When Zazie Beetz gets her hands on a sawed-off shotgun and, you know, blows somebody away, you're excited, she's excited. Feels good to get behind the hero and They Will Kill You. Check it out. It's on VOD. Would recommend. Zazie Beetz rocks. That's our episode. Good Lord. Episode 330. That's not episode 335 of Off Script. This is episode 335 of Off Script. Hold on. I take it back. Yes, that's the episode. Number 335. I'm done and dusted. Andy, what are we watching next week?
So for next week, we will be watching Curry Barker's Obsession, the new horror film about a young teenage boy who wishes for basically his crush to be in love with him. Two Monkey's Paw style disastrous consequences. A lot of buzz behind that. Really excited. And then we're also going to be taking a look at The Crash, which is a new Netflix documentary that's out this Friday. And it's about a car accident that happened back in 2017 where a girl purposely crashed her car into a wall, killing her boyfriend and his friend. She was eventually convicted and I think went to prison. And so it's kind of just looking at this whole incident. I remember this making crazy news and there, like, the law was all crazy about it. They didn't know how to like prosecute it or defend it. It's a whole thing. That's what we're watching, The Crash on Netflix.
It's going to be a good time for doc fans out there. I feel like every time we do a doc on the pod, you and I really enjoy it, but then we post it and like doesn't get nearly the attention Mandalorian and Grogu would get in a couple of weeks. No surprise. That's coming up next week. Obsession. I Love Boosters here in a couple of weeks. If you want to keep up with what's going on the pod, you want to keep up with movies that are coming out, best way to do that is just subscribe to the show on your favorite platform on YouTube, where we post all the time. Anywhere you get your podcasts, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, come follow us, come comment, come like, subscribe. Any engagement helps us, which, you know, it's just not. I like it. I like it when folks help us. That's great. I like it. So please, please, please do some of that, more of that if you want, if you're feeling. Thanks for watching Off Script Film Review, a home of Bolt Cinema. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
That's it. fucking, my brain just stopped working on the outro. It's like, yeah.